I can do that. Yep. I'll do it now. Okay, great. Welcome back to episode 137 of the Guardian Project podcast. I'm your host, Andy. And sometimes when I'm preparing for these intros, I just go blank.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I like that. Mm-hmm. That's like a great intro that you just thought up of 30 seconds ago. It has more flavor that way.
Reveal our secrets.
And I'm your other host, Mike. And LGSs across the country are already announcing that they won't be running Two-Headed Giant for Neon Dynasty release, claiming it's Kamigawa, not Kawigama.
Mm.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Please listen carefully.
And this is the podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering.
But mostly Commander.
So we do have one small announcement here, and it is related to Unfinity. There was an announcement this past week that says, due to the ongoing supply chain complications from challenges associated with COVID-19, the release of Unfinity, the fourth unset, which was originally slated to come out April 1st, 2022, is going to be delayed until the second half of 2022. This is not an April Fool's joke. I know that they said, yep, it's not. It says this delay is specific to Unfinity, and they're going to have more information to share in the coming months. And while they appreciate everyone's understanding as they work toward an updated release time for this wacky, exciting set, it's not coming yet. But we know that Neon Dynasty is not being delayed. So
right.
I can wait a little longer. I'm very, very excited for Unfinity. Oh, and yeah. And I get it. You cut this, the extra set for the standard set. I get it. Or push it back.
Honestly, if they're talking about like manufacturing woes or something, there's supposedly sticker cards in the set. So I am like, it's new technology, if you will.
Are there sticker cards in Unfinity?
So I believe the...
I thought that was one of the secret layers.
So Secret Layer Mischief has sticker cards. I believe the collector's edition of Unfinity, the artwork that we've seen, did have sticker something in there.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. So waiting a little bit longer... But nonetheless, it's happening this year.
Yes. And if you weren't aware, we are back to streaming. If you haven't followed, please go over to our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/Guardian Project Podcast. We're streaming every other Tuesday. If you're listening to this on release day, we streamed yesterday. on January 25th. So you can check out our next stream on February 8th. Come on by, follow so that you get notifications when we go live, so that you don't listen to the podcast the day after we stream and go, dang it, I forgot to watch again.
Yeah, that should be our thing. We always announce, well, we streamed yesterday. Yeah. So hope you enjoyed it. Yeah. Hope you enjoyed
it. It was a great game.
A really great game.
I haven't
game.
Played it yet.
Though. Oh my gosh, I won. I really hope I do well.
Calling it, putting it on the board.
Put it on the board. And if you also hadn't heard, our merch store is live. You can head over to guardianprojectpodcast.com to pick one up. They are $30 free shipping wherever you want. We have those. Thank you everybody who has purchased those. Yes. And we are seeing pictures of them on Twitter. Yes. So it's very exciting.
We have confirmation that our playmat arrived in Alaska. So if we can ship something to Alaska, we could ship it to wherever you are.
If you can dodge a wrench, you can ship a playmat.
That's right.
You can order our merch.
Please do.
Please be able to dodge
and
a wrench.
Also dodge wrenches. Yes.
And if you also want to support us and get a playmat in maybe a different way, you can support us at patreon.com/guardianprojectpod and donate for any dollar amount. We've got lots of tiers and lots of fun stuff to give away.
And you're looking for another way to support the podcast, whatever platform you're enjoying the podcast on now, if you could subscribe, rate, review, and leave comments, we'd be most appreciative.
And you can find us online at theguardianprojectpodcast.com. Again, we're streaming on Twitch at twitch.tv/guardianprojectpodcast. Our social media is on Twitter at guardianpod, Instagram at guardianprojectpodcast. Gameplay videos can be found at youtube.com/theguardianproject. And then you can email us at guardianprojectpod@gmail.com. Coyle, what are we chatting about this week?
This week, we are doing another Patreon reward. This is another patron deck tech from our patron, Micah, who's bringing us a Slippery Simic brew helmed by Gore Moldrak, Amphenologist.
Amphenologist. Salamanders. Lots of them. They're 4/3, right?
Yes, they are.
And
they're slippery. You want to slip right into it?
So So we are talking about Gore Muldrak Amphinologist, actually a deck that I have experience with, a deck that I think is super duper fun, mm-hmm. and one that I have only played against one other person that had this deck. So okay. It also in our Discord, and not Micah's deck. And actually, I had built this at one point, and mm-hmm. I think Micah's deck has a lot more going on than okay. my version had. I also didn't update it, and there's a lot of cards that came out within the last year that really gave some spice to Gore Muldrak, which is a 3/2 human scout for one, a green and a blue that says you and permanents you control have protection from salamanders. And it says at the beginning of your end step, each player who controls the fewest creatures creates a 4/3 blue salamander warrior creature token.
Yeah. This one was printed in Commander Legends, and that's where I saw it, but mostly in the 99 of people who are playing like Emote, like they drafted an Emote Commander Legends deck or something. But yeah, Gore Muldrak in the 99 was really cool to see in a draft format, and it's cool to see how well it actually is working in a constructed format here as well. So we are going to start off with a little blurb that was given to us by Micah to really talk about what the deck is trying to do and how we're going to go about that. So this Gore Muldrak deck makes an interesting promise. He will put a lot of power on the board and he'll protect you from most of it. However, it's up to you, the pilot, to see how well you can leverage this power, which is often in your opponent's hands, to secure your victory. This deck is one of the first times where I feel my personality as a pilot is expressed in game decisions rather than in card choices. Gore Muldrak is giving out 4/3s left and right and center, and it's my job to persuade my opponents to keep hitting each other with their sick blue tokens.
I like how it is framed this way, because I feel the same way when I play this deck, because you can give people creatures so mm-hmm. they don't get a 4/3. You can make sure that you get a 4/3 yourself by giving away one of your creatures.
Oh, yeah.
You really are doing a lot because you're controlling who receives a lot of power mm-hmm. with this deck.
It's like group hug, but like only giving out creatures to make sure that they can swing at your opponents.
Hopefully they're swinging at your opponents and not at you.
Right. Well, I guess if they can't swing at you with your salamander, as long as you have Gore Muldrak.
If you have Gore Muldrak, and if they have like four salamanders, yeah. they can only block one of them. Yeah, and true. It does say that their strategy is to identify the player that's in the lead, which is easy since Gore Muldrak usually doesn't give that player any salamanders, right? So if they have a lot of creatures, mm-hmm. they're probably not going to get a salamander.
Right.
And it says opting instead to catch up the player who's furthest behind on board. So he says he welcomes the player who has fallen behind into the salamander crew, pointing out their mutual opponent's unfavorable trades with a 4/3. And they note that if their salamander dies in battle, Gore Muldrak is just going to replace
right.
the one that the person who potentially was furthest behind just lost, right?
Right.
So if you swing that 4/3, they're going to lose their 4/3 and they're already ahead. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to give you another one anyway. So swing that salamander warrior over there. Definitely not at me though.
It's actually very common to see Gore Muldrak decks play permanents that actually force combat, but also make things unblockable.
Yeah.
But in this case, Micah doesn't want to make them unblockable because he wants them to trade. He wants the salamanders to kill each other or all that kind of stuff. He wants things to die so that he can have more things enter the battlefield. So my new comrade often decides it's worth it to pressure the player in the lead. Of course, I also lead by example, sending my salamanders into the red zone every chance I get. Gore Muldrak only makes more salamanders if you have the fewest creatures, so your salamanders have to die for their slimy brethren to replace them.
He says it plays like an aggro deck and hopes to turn everyone else's decks into aggro decks as well. As the game progresses, the player that's in the lead and the player with the fewest creature really changes pretty often. And as Gore Muldrak's pilot, he tries to bob and weave through this challenging social landscape, offering a helping salam hand to anyone in need, never becoming the actual threat, hopefully until the very, very end when you take everyone else out.
When you look around the table and you're still at 40 life and everyone is sitting at 10 and they go, wait a minute, maybe we've been doing this wrong the whole time, but it's already too late.
I will say, as we put this episode together, the more and more we went through every individual card and prepared, I so badly just want to put mine back together because I took it apart. And I think I took it apart just before Strixhaven came out when a few really cool cards, spoiler alert for this episode, were released.
Oh, yeah.
And they just make so much sense to be in this deck. So starting out, it says the first part of playing Gorm Moldrak is managing creature counts. Sometimes you want to maximize the number of salamanders created. Others, you want to make sure that only the right players create them. Either way, spells like Acorn Catapult and Wrong Turn help to ensure everybody's population is under control. So really, we're talking about board state manipulation here. By giving players creatures or maybe exchanging creatures between players is a pretty big strategy. And really cool. So we want to talk about those first two cards. I'll start with Acorn Catapult, which we recently talked about. It is a artifact that costs 4 mana and has pay 1 and tap it. Our Acorn Catapult deals 1 damage to target creature or player. That creature's controller puts a 1/1 green squirrel creature onto the battlefield. So you can deal 1 damage to one of your opponents, which is cool. You know, we're dealing direct damage here in Simic.
Oh yeah.
But then you give them a squirrel, which is a 1/1, and then at the end of turn, assuming that person has the most creatures, everyone else, or maybe you, would be able to get a 4/3 salamander with Gorm Moldrak's trigger.
Absolutely. You could even give it to yourself in case you need a blocker or something. And it is, I guess, semi-important. This is one of the cards that was updated that it can also hit planeswalkers. So the whole players in old text was updated so that it can hit any permanent or the player themselves. So. But we did talk about this on our FOMO episode. It is cheaper now. So hopefully Micah didn't buy this card about a month ago or a couple months ago when Chatterfang came out and this one went up. So Wrong Turn is an instant speed spell also from Commander Legends that is going to help this deck in a combat trick type of way. So Wrong Turn for 2 and a blue is an instant. It says target opponent gains control of target creature. So you're just going to, you know, give a creature away. If that creature is attacking or blocking and it's in combat and you use Wrong Turn, it removes that creature from combat, which is pretty cool. So you can use it as an instant speed trick, or you can just use it to make sure someone has just enough creatures on their board so that you get the salamander.
Yeah. And the next card is Cultural Exchange, another card that I think is really interesting and isn't played very often in most decks. You might see this in like a Zedru the Greathearted deck,
yeah, but sure.
This works really, really well here. So it's a sorcery for 4 blue. It says choose any number of creatures target player controls. Choose the same number of creature another target player controls. Those players exchange control of those creatures. This effect lasts indefinitely. So it's not just till end of turn. So you can give away salamanders that you have in exchange for non-salamander creatures. And if you have Gorm Moldrak, it says you and permanents you control have protection from salamanders. So they're going to be better used to swing, I guess, at your opponents then if someone's got a 4/3 and perhaps they have 3 of them and someone else only has 1 of them now. And, you know, board states are changing a lot, but you're essentially getting yourself an army of, you know, protection from salamanders.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Peer Pressure is our next card. 4 mana sorcery, 3 and a blue. It says choose a creature type. If you control more creatures of that type than any other player, you gain control of all creatures of that type.
Yeah.
Chances are you're going to have more salamanders than your opponent as long as you are playing the field, right? But maybe you can also do the same thing with warriors. Since you are actually making salamander warrior tokens here, maybe you can trick people and actually end up stealing all of their warriors and everything. It's a very cool card. It's not going to help you put creatures on somebody else's board. It's really just there to steal all the creatures and set yourself up for a really big swing in the next turn.
A card that I never had any chance to ever actually take advantage of. It was in my Gorm Moldrak deck.
Okay. Yeah.
And I had never used it, but I really want to see it resolve and everything just gets pulled to one board.
That'd be cool.
It happens. I've seen it happen with everyone else, but I would like to see it happen more often. Another card, this is a newer card from Strixhaven, is Tempted by the Aurik. So it's a sorcery for 1 blue. It says for each opponent, gain control of up to 1 target creature or planeswalker that player controls with mana value 3 or less. So you can gain control of all those salamanders back. So everybody else gets to make a salamander and you're going to grab 3 of them. You're grabbing 12 power.
Oh, yeah.
For 4 mana. That's 3 blockers. They're going to get more salamanders. Yours have protection. Mm-hmm. So when you do swing, they can't block your salamanders with their salamanders.
Right.
which is also, I think, a really, really cool interaction. But this is stealing three different things. A card that I hadn't obviously considered because my deck had been taken apart before this, but I think this is a solid inclusion for this deck.
Yeah, because the upside is what? You don't necessarily have to take Salamanders. If someone's commander is three mana value or less, you could steal their commander instead. Yep. And still their Salamanders can't block their commander that you're now swinging with.
Correct, yes. Yeah.
Okay, here's a card that has a mechanic that I hate, and I'm just going to say that.
It's my favorite card in the whole deck.
I'm sure. There is a combination with this card that I like that isn't in this deck, but Sudden Substitution is an instant for 2BB that has the mechanic Split Second. If you are unaware, Split Second says as long as this spell is on the stack, players can't cast spells or activate abilities that aren't mana abilities. Yes, you can sacrifice all of your creatures to Ashnod's Altar and Phyrexian Altar in response to a Split Second spell. That's pretty much it. And tap your lands and your mana rocks. But Sudden Substitution says exchange control of target non-creature spell and target creature. Then the spell's controller may choose new targets for it. Probably the most common way you're going to be using this card is you're going to just take someone's spell and give them one of your Salamanders.
Yep.
So
yep.
Why not? But at the same time, you could take someone's creature and throw away an opt or something if you had that or any other spell. Maybe it's a board wipe that it really doesn't matter if you control it or if your opponent controls it. Take one of their creatures to help, you know, change how the board looks and how many creatures you have compared to theirs. I like the way that you can play this with pacts. In the Simic, you can only play a Pact of Negation or a Summoner's Pact. Pact of Negation is an instant speed that says counter target spell, and you have to pay 3BB at the beginning of your next upkeep or you lose the game. And Summoner's Pact is very similar in green, but you search your library for a creature and put it in your hand and you pay 2GG or you lose at the beginning of the next upkeep. But the cool part is you can Sudden Substitution one of these spells to one of your opponents that doesn't have the ability to produce that color, and then they will have to pay the mana at their upkeep, and if they can't produce the color and can't pay it, they lose the game.
It's very niche, I've never seen it happen before. And I know, and every time one of this card comes up, it's always brought up. And it's, you know, you're living the dream, I guess, if you can make it happen. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've done it, let us know.
Please
let us know.
And clip it and send me the clip.
Yeah, honestly, I think it's one of my favorite spells in the deck. I think it's one of the best decks that can take advantage of some sudden substitution. Although it can be played in any blue deck, to be fair.
Yeah.
And I feel very much like the way that I built Gore Muldrak is very different from the way that Micah has built it, which I like. Mm-hmm. I looked even at my deck list to compare, and they're very different, which I like to see. And the next card is one that I hadn't actually considered. It works really, really well in the deck, which is Ward of Bones, an artifact for 6 colorless mana. It says each opponent who controls more creatures than you cannot cast creature spells. The same is true for artifacts and enchantments. And then each opponent who controls more lands than you cannot play lands. So since the deck is kind of playing catch up in some instances, and with my experience playing Gore Muldrak in the past, I have often seen that I had the least amount of creatures, just the way that I had built it. Mm-hmm. Your opponents can't play creatures that they had. That they have in hand, or even their commander, because it's creatures.
Right.
So you just can't play. I guess if your commander is a planeswalker, you can play your commander.
That's true.
So benefits to planeswalkers as commanders, Ward of Bones. But I think this is one of those cards that it's going to draw artifact hate.
Yeah.
And this is one you're like, I don't really.
Yeah, go for
it. I'm not mad if I lose this because it did its job if it lasts around the table once or twice. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a very cool card. I don't want to play against it, but
well, that's very true. I mean, but like you said, if someone's using the removal spell on Ward of Bones instead of Gore Muldrak, that's a win.
Exactly,
for sure,
100%.
So Primal Vigor is one of our token doubling enchantments. It's the only token doubling enchantment in this deck. I think it's the most affordable token doubler other than Aedrix and Nev. But Primal Vigor, Aedrix and Nev is in the deck as well. Primal Vigor is an enchantment for 4 and a green that says if one or more tokens we put onto the battlefield, twice that many of those tokens are put on the battlefield instead. And if one or more +1/+1 counters would be placed on a creature, twice that many +1/+1 counters are placed on that creature instead. So it's a doubling season like effect, but it doesn't double all counters, just +1/+1 counters. But the unique part of this is it's a global enchantment. So this not only works for your board state, but also your opponent's board states. So you can have them start getting two salamanders at your end step or yourself getting two salamanders. But it also, you know, you have to watch out. So if you're playing against a token deck, they might start getting out of control. But then again, once they start getting out of control, they're no longer going to get salamanders from Primal Vigor.
Yeah, this is a time when you are actually happy to play Primal Vigor because right. you already want your opponents to take advantage of getting creatures. You're already giving it to them anyway, so mm-hmm. you might as well give double.
Yeah.
This is a solid card for this sure. deck.
Yeah, it could create 8 power for your opponents that you have protection from. Absolutely. I mean, it's potentially, if you give it to all of your opponents, it's 24 power you can produce on your end step that you and all permanents you control have protection from.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And then another card that it's a very niche card, probably not played in very many commander decks. This is Teferi's Veil, an enchantment for 1 and a blue that says whenever a creature you control attacks, it phases out at the end of combat. While it's phased out, it's treated as though it doesn't exist. It phases back in just before you untap during your next untap step. So if you're swinging with all of your creatures, whether they're salamanders or not, they're going to phase out, assuming you don't swing with Gore Muldrak, right? You keep Gore Muldrak up. When they phase out after combat, you will be left with likely one creature, or you can manipulate it so that you have just the least, whatever you want it to be.
Yep.
You will be the only person then who gets a salamander with Gore Muldrak's trigger. This is very cool.
Yeah, this gets around, you know, we talked about swinging with salamanders and trying to trade in combat. And some people, you know, well, one, you're going to have protection from salamanders, so they're not going to be able to block with their salamanders. So they would have to block with their creatures. Maybe they don't have favorable blocks and they let things through. This is a way to allow you to remove your tokens and they're going to come back on your step. They're going to be tapped anyways, so you're not going to be able to block with them. Teferi's Veil, very, very cool.
Yes.
All right, so going back to Micah, since so much card draw results from new salamanders entering the battlefield, if any don't die in combat, you want ways to sacrifice them or have them temporarily removed from the battlefield in the case of the aforementioned Teferi's Veil. Many of blue and green's removal options like Resculpt and Beast Within feed into this by replacing your opponent's actual threatening permanents with creatures that may get them or that may let them get a salamander. So we're talking about card draw when salamanders enter the battlefield and removal spells that replace the creature with a token so that, you know, they don't actually lose the number of creatures that they have on board. They stay exactly the same. Or maybe if you remove a different kind of permanent, you can increase the number of creatures that they have. And the first enchantment here is Elemental Bond. So Elemental Bond is a 3-mana enchantment that says whenever a creature with power 3 enters the battlefield under your control, you draw a card. So salamanders being 4 power 3 toughness, every time you make one or multiple for each one that comes in, you're going to be able to draw a card.
Yeah. And then Garrick's Uprising, which is very similar, an enchantment for 2 and a green says whenever it enters the battlefield, if you control a creature with power 4 or greater, you draw a card. And like Elemental Bond being 3 or greater, we don't care if it's 3 or 4 because the salamanders are 4. So you're going to hit it no matter what.
Exactly.
It also says creatures you control have trample. And then it also says whenever a creature with power 4 or greater enters a battlefield under your control, you draw a card. So you get one when it enters. And then when the salamanders enter, if you've got a Primal Vigor, you've got Aedrix and Nev, you've got whatever you have, and you're getting multiple, you're going to get multiple card draw.
Yeah. One more permanent that cares about card draw with entering the battlefield is Kiora Behemoth Beckoner from War of the Spark. This is one of those only minus loyalty planeswalkers that they printed there. So for 2 and then a hybrid green blue, you get a Kiora that enters with 7 loyalty counters that has the static whenever a creature with power 4 or greater enters the battlefield under your control, draw a card, and has a -1 to untap target permanent. So not only is this going to allow you to draw some extra cards every time salamanders come in, but it also acts as pseudo ramp because you can untap lands or rocks, pseudo vigilance by untapping your creatures. A lot of potential here with this planeswalker.
And now we don't only care, or Micah doesn't only care about ETB effects to draw cards. There's other permanents here that are going to be able to get us some card advantage based on those salamanders. Cards like Bonder's Enclave, a land that taps for colorless, or you can pay 3 and tap it to draw a card only if you control a creature with power 4 or greater.
Yeah, sometimes we have some instant speed stuff like Return of the Wild Speaker for 4 and a green. You get to choose one to either draw cards equal to the greatest power among non-human creatures you control, which will most likely be 4 power controlling a salamander warrior, but also has the other ability of non-human human creatures you control get +3/+3. So turning all your salamanders into 7 power salamanders for a big swing could definitely win you the game. So maybe this is a game closer as well.
Yeah, a Life's Legacy, a sorcery for 1 and a green. It says as an additional cost to cast the spell, you have to sacrifice a creature. So if you have your salamander, it says draw cards equal to the sacrifice creature's power. So for 1 and a green, draw 4. That's great.
Yeah.
Yes. And, yes, please.
And you're going to continue to, you know, manipulate your own board state that way by sacrificing your creatures, which is great. Greater Good is actually an enchantment where we can do that repeatedly on the same turn or on anyone's turn, really. Greater Good for 2 green green. You get an enchantment that says sacrifice a creature, draw cards equal to the sacrifice creature power, then discard 3 cards. So you're only going to be netting 1 card each time, but at least you're going to be able to see 4 cards and then choose which 3 cards from your hand to discard. It's not like Brainstorm where you have to choose like from those 3 cards, or no, Brainstorm, you don't have to choose from those 3 cards, like Sylvan Library where you would have to choose from the 3 cards. Not like that. So Greater Good, you're going to see 4 cards every time.
Yep. And then Orin Frostfang, a 2/6 snake that costs 3 green green. It says attacking creatures you control have death touch, and whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. So here, if they have a lot of salamanders and you have Gormaldrak out, they're not going to be able to block, which is great. Now, if you don't have Gormaldrak out, this is like more incentive for them to still not block because your attacking creatures have death touch. And if you don't have Gormaldrak and they need to block, they're going to lose their creatures because yours have death touch, assuming theirs aren't indestructible or whatever.
Right.
Or you're going to get through and you're going to draw a bunch of cards with your creatures.
There's no downside. It's pretty great. So Toski, Bearer of Secrets, is doing something similar. So for the 3 and a green, you get a legendary creature, Squirrel, 1/1 that can't be countered, is indestructible whenever, and it must attack if able, but also has whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. I do want to press that indestructible is a very, very strong keyword. If you had enchantments with indestructible that did something similar to this, it would be insane, especially for only 4 mana. This is a great card.
It's a great card. And then one of my other favorites in this deck, and actually just a favorite that I think is just really good in Commander in general, is Biden of Thassa. I don't know what it is. I've seen less and less of this card recently, and I feel like anytime I need card draw, I'm adding this in pretty quickly. So Biden of Thassa is a legendary enchantment artifact for 2 blue that says whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card. It also has an activated ability that I feel like no one else ever activates, which is where the power in this, it's not where the only power in this card lies, but a lot of power lies in this. And it says pay 1 and a blue and tap it. Creatures your opponents control attack this turn if able. So not only are you getting card advantage similar to that Orin Frostfang or, Toski, Bearer of Secrets, but here we have the added effect of being able to essentially, air quotes, goad. So forcing your opponent's creatures to attack. Now it doesn't say they can't attack you. They can attack you.
Yeah.
But if you have Gormaldrak and you were able to, manipulate the board that you've got 4 blockers and it's literally, there's no reason for them to swing at you.
Right.
Hopefully they will swing at your opponent.
Yeah. Well, especially if they have nothing but salamanders, they wouldn't be able to swing at you anyways.
Yeah. And I think this was the biggest strategy, at least that I relied on when I had built Gormaldrak, was forced combat, which we don't see a ton here, which I actually really like. Mm-hmm. I was playing on cards from the impetus cycle. So you would enchant a creature to force it to attack. And then it wouldn't obviously attack you. So you give them salamanders that you have protection from. And then the thing that you don't have protection from, you just goad.
For sure.
So I think this does a lot here. And then you even added a note here that in combination with Kiora, Behemoth Beckoner, if you can get your creature and you can activate this more than one time, if you have a way to untap the Biden of Thassa.
Yeah. So you can do it more than once, which is cool. There are like 2 other enchantments that are at this mana value that sometimes we talk about, Coastal Piracy and Reconnaissance Mission. Mm-hmm. This is by far the best of the 3, especially for this. You can argue Reconnaissance Mission is better in a cycling deck because it doesn't have cycling for 2.
Of course.
But Coastal Piracy is just a 4 mana enchantment that lets you draw cards. Doesn't have this extra caveat. Maybe it dodges some removal because it's not an artifact, but really Biden of Thassa is the one that you want to do. But how about another commander that you used to own here? And that's Edric, Spy Master of Trust.
Oh, yes. Very, very fun card.
Uh-huh. So for 3 mana, one, a green and a blue, you get a legendary creature, Elf Rogue 2/2. It says whenever a creature deals combat damage to one of your opponents, its controller may draw a card. So this is not only card draw for you when you hit your opponents, but it's card draw for your opponents when they hit your opponents, giving even more incentive for them to swing those salamanders that couldn't swing at you anyways, all at your opponents.
Yeah, and the card draw really matters when you're playing Gore Maldrak against a color that has, or a build specifically that knows that they lack card advantage. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're playing, and I hate to say let's go back to mono white, but you sometimes I've seen decks built in colors that can draw a lot of cards, and they just didn't throw a lot of card draw into it, you know, because whatever it was doing is a powerful enough strategy.
Right.
But if you're just gonna hand me salamanders and tell me to swing so that I can draw a card, mm-hmm. I'm gonna swing so I can draw a card, and it. That is the worst situation when you're the person who has to go just after the Gore Maldrak player.
Yes.
If you have to swing, you lose yours, and so does whoever that blocked.
Mm-hmm.
The person after you then has the open,
yes,
open spot.
They're
to
the
get
ones
in.
That are really going to draw the cards.
So you always want, I feel like with this build, and it's so funny when you sit down at a table, I would want to be kitty corner
mm-hmm.
from the Gore Maldrak player. I want someone in between us.
Yeah.
Kitty corner, I'm picturing a square table.
That's
and
true.
So kitty corner. But if it's a circular table, I want them across from me.
Yes, you want them directly.
Yeah,
across.
I just want someone between us is what I'm trying to say. And mm-hmm. I think Edric is a great card. It's also nice because it kind of keeps the game moving.
It right? does.
You're avoiding board stalls because people just want to draw some cards.
Yeah, it's definitely doing exactly what Micah's intention is, and that's getting people to swing.
Getting people to swing. So some more information from Micah's deck. Removal spells in this deck are unique in a way that it leaves a creature token behind. This is often seen as a drawback to some removal spells, right? You remove something, you give someone a treasure. You remove something, you give someone a beast. You're like, I wish you didn't have, you know, sometimes go for the throat is better, right? You just pay one and a black, you can remove something
sure.
and it's gone. But these spells are great because with Gore Maldrak, you're keeping the board state steady for the salamander creation and the manipulation of who's going to receive them. So cards like Resculpt here for one and a blue for an instant that says exile target artifact or creature, its controller creates a 4/4 blue and red elemental creature token. So you remove whatever it is that you didn't have protection from, they're going to get a 4/4 blue and red elemental. You still don't have protection from that, but maybe later you can just exchange that bird with the salamander, and now your bird elemental has pro salamanders.
Yeah. And notably, the 4 toughness on this elemental matches the 4 power on the salamanders, and they will trade with each other. So I like that. And I do really like the fact that this is exile effect. So, you know, you just replace someone's indestructible Eldrazi with a 4/4 that trades with your salamander. That's what I really want to see. Beast Within is a very common green removal spell. I play it in every green deck that I have, as long as the mana value isn't restricted by some sort of companion, I suppose. Beast Within for 2 and a green is an instant that says destroy target permanent. Its controller creates a 3/3 green beast creature token. So again, you can go and remove someone's creature and replace it with a 3/3 beast, or you can remove literally any other permanent. You could remove a land and replace it with a 3/3 beast. You know, any sort of problematic thing and increase the number of creatures that player has. But Curse of the Swine probably has to be my favorite card out of any of these in this category of removal that replaces with tokens. Curse of the Swine is an X blue sorcery that says exile X target creatures. For each creature exiled this way, its controller creates a 2/2 green boar creature token. So not only is it exile effect, but it can be potentially a board wipe exile effect that turns, I use in air quotes, those creatures into 2/2 green boars that don't actually trade with your salamanders. So now your salamanders are the strongest power and toughness on the board after a resolution of the spell.
Yeah, they won't want to swing at you with those. Also, the next one is something that can trade with a salamander. This is Pongify for 1 blue mana. It's instant speed. It says destroy target creature. It can't be regenerated. Its controller creates a 3/3 green ape creature token. You know what's funny? Recently, I have seen a lot of regeneration in my pods. I've played quite a few games so far this year, and I've seen regenerate be relevant in 3 games already.
Nice.
That I've actually written in my freeform notes.
Yeah.
Regenerate is a problem.
Yeah.
Like it was a problem,
right.
You know, and that's cool to see. Pongify, you can't regenerate.
We actually talked about that last week too. An enchantment that sacrifices a creature, target creature gains or regenerates or whatever. And Wrath of God being a really good board wipe. So wow, it's really cool to see real life reflect what we talk about.
Right.
How about another salamander that was printed in Commander Legends that we can slot in as a removal spell? Amphin Mutineer for 3 and a blue. You get a 3/3 salamander pirate. So this is actually going to be your weakest salamander by 1 power. When Amphin Mutineer enters the battlefield, exile up to 1 target non-salamander creature. That creature's controller creates a 4/3 blue salamander warrior creature token. So you're going to have protection from that token anyway. So why not kill it and give him another salamander? But it has a special ability, Encore. So for 4 blue-blue, you can exile the card from your graveyard, and for each opponent, create a token copy that attacks that opponent this turn if able. They gain haste, and you sacrifice them at the beginning of the next end step. You can only activate it as a sorcery, but this is going to allow you to replace 3 of your opponent's creatures with 4/3 salamanders. Again, a creature that you have protection from.
Yeah, so when it comes to maximizing the salamanders, Micah actually says they want more gore, which it's very gore, Moldra. Yeah. I got it. Okay. Uh-huh. It was very good. I appreciated the thoughtful explanation behind the primer here. It was really great. And cards like Sakashima's or Spark Double can make easy copies. Double Major and Helm of the Host create tokens that can double and you know populate later. So playing clone spells that ignore the legendary rule. So with the legendary creature, you can only control one of them at a time. You have to sacrifice one. There are a few cards here that ignore that. So it's okay to have more than one. Like Sakashima of 1,000 Faces, one of my favorite cards from Commander Legends. Sakashima of 1,000 Faces is a 3/1 human rogue for 3 and a blue that says you may have Sakashima of 1,000 Faces enter the battlefield as a copy of another creature you control, except it has Sakashima of 1,000 Faces other abilities, which says the legend rule does not apply to permanents that you control. So this is one of the partners that came out in Commander Legends, and you can play this out as a copy of Gore Muldrak, or maybe something even better if you've sudden substitutioned and stole something great, true, or cultural exchange. So you take maybe their commander that is really, really strong. You know, maybe you steal a Kamal that pumps that combat and you want a second, whatever. But in a lot of cases here, you're going to make an extra Gore Muldrak, which is going to make even more salamanders at the end of turn.
Yeah. Another Sakashima here. Sakashima the Imposter is a 4 mana, 2 blue-blue human rogue 3/1. That says a Sakashima the Imposter comes in to play, you may choose a creature in play. If you do, Sakashima comes into play as a copy of that creature, except its name is still Sakashima the Imposter. It's still legendary, and it gains pay 2 blue-blue to return Sakashima the Imposter to its owner's hand at the end of turn. So this is, again, it's going to keep its name Sakashima. So for all intents and purposes, it's going to be a Gore Muldrak, except by name, which is going to get around the legendary rule. But I also like the fact that you can have Sakashima return to your hand at end of turn with the activated ability, allow you to use it some more. And it even, you can stack it in a way at your end step to have Sakashima return to your hand before your final Gore Muldrak trigger resolves. And when Gore Muldrak is looking at the number of creatures you have to see who gets the salamander, it's at the resolution of the ability, not when the ability goes on the stack. So you can actually, just take one of your Gore Muldraks back so that I get the next salamander.
Yeah, I get the next salamander. And then next we have Spark Double. So this is a 0/0 illusion creature for 3 and a blue. It says you may have Spark Double enter the battlefield as a copy of a creature or planeswalker you control, except it enters with an additional +1/+1 counter on it if it's a creature, and it enters with an additional loyalty counter on it if it's a planeswalker, and it is not legendary if that permanent is legendary. So you can get a second Gore Muldrak here, and it's just going to be stronger than your Gore Muldrak because it's going to get a +1/+1 counter on it. And then the nice thing here is if you did lose your original Gore Muldrak, you still have this one, and then you have the other Gore Muldrak sitting in the command zone to cast again later. Mm-hmm. I did find myself doing that a lot in this type of deck where, right, you know what, I have one. If you know someone plays something where I have to sack a creature, I might just sack my original Gore Muldrak,
right,
because I'm going to get a salamander from the one that I get to keep, and it feels like I'm not losing a card, right?
Right.
And it's going to cost a little bit more now, mm-hmm, but it's, you know, I get to use it again later.
Yeah, it's probably going to get killed eventually anyway, so you might as well. And you probably don't have reanimation spells in your deck to do that. Another card from Strixhaven, probably one that you wish existed.
This is the one that I really wish that we had.
Yeah. So this is a dual side card, or modal double face card. This is Augmenter Pugilist. Which is a 3-mana, 1 green-green troll druid 3/3 with trample. This is as long as you control 8 or more lands, Augmenter Pugilist gets +5/+5. That's not the important part. Echoing Equation on the other half of the card is the important part for this deck. So for 3 blue-blue, you get a sorcery that says, choose target creature you control. Each other creature you control becomes a copy of it until end of turn, except those creatures aren't legendary if the chosen creature is legendary. And that until end of turn is really, really important because you can make all of your salamanders into Gore Moldraks and at the end of turn, make a bunch of salamanders before they turn back into their original salamander form.
Yeah.
It's really cool. It's a really cool card for this.
Yeah, it's a really good card. One that, I'm not sure how often the actual Augmenter Pugilist would be relevant. It's possible that's what you want to do, right?
An 8-8 for 3, there's nothing to laugh at.
But Echoing Equation is nuts. And I did not realize that this was how that worked. Mm-hmm. That is nuts.
Oh, yeah.
So strong.
Yeah, token decks that want to make a bunch of your own commander. Heck yeah.
Another card that is going to actually make a copy of a creature here is Double Major. So for a green and a blue, you get an instant that says copy target creature spell you control, except it isn't legendary if that spell is legendary. So you do have to do this while your spell is on the stack. So when you cast Gore Moldrak, you can cast Double Major or any other legendary creature that you have. We haven't gone over the creatures yet, but there are some legendary creatures that mm-hmm. would be wonderful to have more than one copy of. And then later you can populate or make extra copies. We already know that we have token doublers
right.
in the deck. So if you're doing this late game, you might get 2 or 4. Depending on how many of those doublers you have out.
Absolutely. Helm of the Host is similarly going to be making token creature copies of your legendary that can get doubled by these doublers. Helm of the Host is a 4-mana legendary artifact equipment, so 4 generic mana. At the beginning of combat on your turn, create a token that's a copy of the equipped creature, except the token isn't legendary if equipped creature is legendary. That token gains haste and is equipped for 5. So it's 9 mana to equip to Gore Moldrak, which is pretty steep, but then you immediately get a hasty Gore Moldrak. It doesn't go away at the end step or anything like that. And if you have a token doubler, you'll get 2 every time you go to combat and just be making more and more and more salamanders.
Yeah, it's really good. It works really well with Aedrix and Nev, Primal Vigor. And then if opponents cast anything that allow you to double, if someone else has a Primal Vigor as well, you can take advantage of that.
Yeah, I really like this Selesnya Eulogist that has a populate ability. So Selesnya Eulogist is a 3-mana 3/3 for 2 and a green that says, or that has an activated ability of pay 2 and a green to exile target creature card from a graveyard, then populate. So you're going to be able to keep making extra tokens, whether that's your 4/3 salamander or your double major, doubled Gore Moldrak is, depending on the board state, but it's repeatable graveyard hate for a really big advantage. I really like this card here.
Yeah. So Micah also says that blue has a lot of ways to change creature types from cards like Standardized to Amphib Mutineer. You'll often find that your opponent's threats was really just a salamander all along.
Oh.
So cards like Metamorphic Alliteration and Mystic Reflection can pull double duty, allowing us to really render a potential threat, a salamander, or upgrade something into another copy of Gore Moldrak. So taking full of Gore Moldrak's ability and granting protection from salamanders by turning our other opponents' non-salamanders into salamanders is something that I really enjoyed because it feels like you're playing politics with this portion of,
right.
of your build. So someone's looking at it and they go, okay, you've only got 2 creatures. I have 3 and one of them is, I don't know, a 10/10, but maybe it doesn't have trample.
Sure.
And you can just show them, some of these are permanents too, and not even
right.
just spells.
Right.
And so some of them are always sitting around and presenting a threat.
Mm-hmm.
So you can pretty much make sure that they're not going to swing at you. But the first card here is Standardized. Standardized is an instant for blue-blue that says, choose creature type other than wall. Each creature becomes that type until end of turn. So if someone's swinging out a huge swing at you and you've got hopefully enough blockers, or maybe enough that you can, stave off some of that damage. You turn everything into the salamander creature type. You have protection from salamanders. You're going to knock out, hopefully, some stuff during that combat trick.
Yeah, even if you don't have blockers, it just acts as a fog at that way. So mm-hmm. really, really cool. Amoeboid Changeling is a card that even I've played in some of my Changeling decks. For 1 and a blue, you get a creature shapeshifter, which has Changeling, which is a salamander and a warrior, in case you're interested. It has 2 activated abilities of tap target creature gains all creature types till end of turn, or tap target creature loses all creature types until end of turn. And Amoeboid Changeling is a 1/1, so this is just going to be an instant speed. This creature is not going to deal damage to me or my permanents this turn.
Exactly. Another one is Image Crafter, so it's a 1/1 wizard for one blue, and it says tap choose creature type other than legend or wall. So this is a very old card, and it says target creature's type becomes that type until end of turn. So you've got some redundancy there. And these two, they just sit out, and yeah. You know, I'm not going to swing my huge thing at you because you have I have protection from it.
Yeah, and I'm probably not going to be using a removal spell on this 1/1 wizard. Probably.
Definitely not. But that's the power of that wizard.
Is. So a repeatable effect we also have on an enchantment of Unnatural Selection for one and a blue. You get an enchantment that has pay one generic mana, choose a creature type other than wall, target creature's type becomes that type until end of turn. So if opponent's swinging with 10 creatures and you have 10 mana, all 10 of those creatures are salamanders now, baby.
Yeah, another card here, Metamorphic Alliteration. So this is an enchantment aura for one and a blue. It says enchant creature. As Metamorphic Alliteration enters the battlefield, choose a creature. Enchanted creature is a copy of the chosen creature. So if you've given something away and you want a copy of it yourself, you can turn a creature into that. If you want maybe to get rid of one of your opponent's commanders, you can play this on another one of their problematic creatures, make them choose. They're going to have to sacrifice their commander. It doesn't get around the legend rule. This is a cool way to get rid of one of your opponent's commanders.
Mm-hmm. You could also turn one of your opponent's creatures into a Gore Muldrak if you know you're going to have the smallest board state to guarantee you're going to get an extra salamander on their turn. But you do have the drawback of now they have protection from salamanders.
So now the poor two people who have no Gore Muldrak yes. are in the red zone.
And oof. They're calling pest control because there's too many salamanders around. Mystic Reflection from Kaldheim is a very cool card. Didn't think about this one for this deck. It's an instant for one and a blue. It says choose target non-legendary creature. The next time one or more creatures or planeswalker enter the battlefield this turn, they enter as copies of the chosen creature. It also has foretell, so you can pay two to turn it face down, and then on any other turn you can cast it for one blue rather than one and a blue. So if you have a big turn, or if you see someone trying to resolve an Avenger of Zendikar or something, you could Mystic Reflection, turn all of their 0/1 plants into 4/3 salamanders. And that might sound terrifying to most people out there, to turn zero power into like 28 power, but again, you have protection from it. They'll swing it somewhere else, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. I'm gonna turn them all into salamanders. You yeah. don't you definitely don't want that swing to be at me.
No, well, you can't.
And there's cards here that I do like that they're more I guess They fuel the way the strategy works, like mm-hmm. a Balaged Recovery.
Yes.
Really great card. It's a land on one side, but it'll return target card from your graveyard to your hand. So you can bring back that standardize, and then someone sees, oh, they're holding it, and they have double blue. Oh, they're probably going to use that, and then my swing at them's not going to do anything. So I guess I'll just swing at Coil instead.
Oh, why does it have to be me? Why do I get targeted?
Because you probably have... a lot. You're not going to have very many salamanders, but you'll be far ahead some other reason.
Somehow, yeah.
No, you'll have 900 sure. life from your Ikra Shiddiqui deck. That's how.
And at least 9 Ikra Shiddiqui.
And at least 9 of them. So there's other really fun cards in this deck that didn't really fit into any of these categories. And the first one here is actually a card that I never had in my deck because I could not find a copy of it because it was printed in the M19 gift pack. Mm-hmm. It's the only printing of Angler Turtle, which is a 5/7 hexproof turtle for 5 blue that says creatures your opponents control attack each combat if able.
Never thought I'd see this on a blue creature, but whoa, this is cool.
I could not find it at any of our LGSs. Mm-hmm. And at the time I didn't really... I was not sure if the deck was something that I was going to love sure. or not, so I didn't order an Angler Turtle. I'm so happy to see that this is here because it's like one of those cards, like a Pursued Whale that forces combat oh, yeah. because you're giving someone a goblin that for all those cards, like the Impetus Cycle, that's what I was trying to do. So mm-hmm. Angler Turtle in this deck is probably one of my favorite things to see here after cool. Sudden Substitution.
Now, I like seeing some of these old cards. This next one is from Scourge that I've never heard of before that maybe will help other people look at their tribal decks, and maybe you can find a place for this particular enchantment, Faces of the Past. So for two and a blue, you get an enchantment that says, whenever a creature is put into a graveyard from play, tap or untap all creatures that share a creature type with it. So whether or not you are, you could attack with all of your salamanders, and before blockers are declared, you can instantly sacrifice one of your creatures, tap all salamanders, and then, or actually if an opponent is attacking with their salamanders, add another opponent who can actually block with their salamanders. You can then maybe sacrifice one of your salamanders, tap all salamanders that are out there. Now they can't block with their salamanders. Now the swing might be for lethal. These are just the situations that came up with my head.
That's wild. Another card, Azuri's Predation. So this is a very popular card, a sorcery for 5 green. For each creature your opponents control, create a 4/4 green Phyrexian beast creature token. Each of those beasts fights a different one of those creatures. So this works with that, the power being at 4, you've got card draw with your elemental bond and your Garrick's Uprising. They can trade with salamanders if you've got a doubler out. This is a perfect card for this deck.
Yeah. And actually, if you have Gore Muldrak out, it just kills the salamanders because your guys have yours protection.
Heck
yeah. This is awesome. I'm so glad that they reprinted this in the Commander Legends AC Precon, I believe it was. Propaganda and Dissipation Field are two enchantments that Micah plays in order to prevent people from attacking himself. So Propaganda is a 3-mana enchantment for 2 and a blue that says creatures can't attack you unless their controller pays 2 for each creature they control that's attacking you. Obviously, that doesn't prevent them from doing it, but it deters them. Dissipation Field is very similar in a deterrent. It doesn't prevent, but for 2 blue, you get an enchantment that says whenever a permanent deals damage to you, return it to its owner's hand. This is also kind of an extra if you lose Gore Muldrak and people start swinging their salamanders at you, they're going to bounce the token, which ultimately makes it cease to exist.
Right. And then finally, one of the game enders here, Coat of Arms, an artifact that costs 5 colorless mana. And it says, each creature you control, or I guess it's 5 generic, not 5 colors. Mm. Each creature gets +1/+1 for each other creature on the battlefield that shares at least one creature type with it. So we're making a lot of salamanders, and everybody's going to have those salamanders. Oh, yeah. So if you can steal them somehow, or just say go to town, I have protection. So even though there's 8 salamanders out and they're all getting +8/+8, and then warrior is not an uncommon creature type to see, so maybe even bigger, it's fine. Don't swing at me, because mine are just going to take yours out. Yours will do nothing to me. Hopefully we have the most creatures. Yes. When we've played the Coat of Arms, we're doing that when we have the most creatures. But this ends games. I love seeing Coat of Arms. And it's also great because if you do have Gore Muldrak out and your opponents only have salamanders, you have protection from them.
Right.
So you're just going to be able to swing in and take them out anyway.
Yeah.
It's one of those cards you do have to play it strategically though, to make sure you don't get the backlash. But this is the deck, and we've had a great time putting this deck together. And Micah, thank you so much for your support. Now is part of the show where we want to send maybe some of our suggestions to you.
Oh yeah.
So I think my favorite one actually, and one that just seems not even very showy, is Arcane Lighthouse. It's a land that taps for a colorless, and it has pay 1 generic and tap it until end of turn. Creatures your opponents control lose hexproof and shroud and can't have hexproof or shroud. So with the fact that there's quite a few ways to exchange creature tokens, I think this is pretty relevant, because someone's going to put the boots or the lightning greaves or, whatever on a creature to give it hexproof or shroud. You're going to say, not today. Mm-hmm. And you're just going to, then you can trade away a salamander and gain control of their creature.
Oh, for sure.
I think that Arcane Lighthouse is a pretty cool card for a deck like this that does do a pretty good amount of targeting, and then maybe even adding in combination, because it does tap for colorless. You are in a 2-color deck, so it's probably not too big of a deal to have a few colorless
for
lands,
sure,
but even
sure.
Adding Yavimaya, Cradle of Growth. So if you don't need to use it, it can still tap for green later, and then all of your lands can tap for green.
For sure. It's a good point. It's like Yavimaya is Urborg, but for forests, and I guess it really should probably be played in any green plus something else.
Maybe. Deck. I'm not sure if it's there yet, but I think here it fits really well, especially if we're going to add a few more colorless lands.
Yeah, well, let's stick with another land here real quick. One that I really, really, really enjoy. is Forbidden Orchard. It's a rainbow land, so it can tap for one mana of any color, but whenever you tap it for mana, target opponent creates a 1/1 colorless spirit creature token. This is a spirit that's on the ground that I often refer to as a garbage ground spirit. So why not you know, give a token to one of your opponents, manipulate their board state so that they won't get a salamander, and you give them just a trashy 1/1 spirit that cannot fly.
Wow. For all the spirit fans, I apologize on the behalf
for all the ground spirit fans.
Ground spirit fans. Yeah, no, it's a very strong card.
I do want to see like a hockey jersey now where it's ground spirits or something.
Ground
and
spirits.
They have a logo. I would buy that.
And you have like the foam finger that says like number one fan.
Yeah, but the back is 1/1. It's always 1/1.
Oh, yeah, I got it. Yeah. Another card I liked in seeing in a Gore Maldrake deck is Lawan Cephalid Empress. So this is a 2/3 legendary Cephalid Noble for 3 and a blue. It says when it enters the battlefield, return all blue creatures your opponents control to their hands. So you can remove all of their salamanders. If they're in blue, it's very unfortunate because it also says your opponents can't cast blue creature spells.
Oops.
Now, most blue decks aren't playing blue, like, a ton
sure.
of creatures. I typically see spell slinger decks. Mm-hmm. I mean, Orvar just wants Orvar because they're just going to play spells and make right. more things.
Right.
So it can be maybe a little too oppressive. Mm-hmm. But if you needed a way to get rid of those salamanders, or if someone listening is looking to build this deck, it's a very cool card to add if you're looking for an addition to a Gore Maldrake deck.
Yeah, this card in particular would hose my Tetsuko Umezawa deck, which focuses on blue creatures.
That's true.
Domineering Will. This one was only printed one time back in Commander 2014, and I hadn't heard of it before I started doing some research on this deck, but this is a pretty cool. So for 3 and a blue, you get an instant that says, target player gains control of up to 3 target non-attacking creatures until end of turn. Untap those creatures. They block this turn if able. So you can either, you know, force someone to block with creatures, with someone else's creatures, and make sure that things trade to the salamanders, or you can actually do it in someone's second main phase to just manipulate board state, make sure that one person it's not going to get the salamander that you don't want to get. And then they'll just return back at the end of turn.
Yeah. And my last one here, I can't do this without a combo. Every time I have to do it. And this is a card where you're giving something away, which, you know, already fits with the deck anyway, which is donate in combination with cards like Xenograft, Maskwood Nexus, or Arcane Adaptation. So essentially, you're going to play a permanent, you're going to give it away. And after you've played that permanent, you're going to gain protection essentially from that player, assuming you have Gore Maldrake. So cards like Arcane Adaptation that are an enchantment that when they enter the battlefield, you choose a creature type. And then it says creatures you control are the chosen type in addition to their other types. The same is true for spells you control and creatures you own that aren't on the battlefield. Xenograft is an enchantment. You again enters, you choose Salamander here. It says each creature you control is the chosen type. Then Maskwood Nexus says creatures you control are every creature type, and again the same is true for spells you control and things that you don't own, that you own that aren't on the battlefield. So you play those out, you name Salamander, and then you cast Donate. So it's a sorcery for 2 and a blue. It says target player gains control of target permanent you control. It is a lot to put into you. It does require 2 things for your plan to come together. So right. if you wanted maybe consistency, you probably want to run all 4, but I just had to mention it because it does work in this deck.
For sure.
You know, I'm going to give you this Xenograft, and unless you remove it, everything that you have is a salamander. And as long as I have enough creatures, you're just not going to be able to swing through at me. If you are in the late game and there's only 2 of you left, mm-hmm. Your opponent has to find an answer.
Oh yeah, for sure. Donate is a reserve list card. Just I did want to mention
this is true.
That. But it's only like it's under $15 right now, which is pretty rare for a reserve
list
card.
In foil though, it's like 230, but you know, so go for the foil. Show us the real bling. And that was my last suggestion. Yes. I really think that that's really fun to see in a deck like this.
And my last one here is going to be a card that's almost identical to a card that Micah, you already play, Pongnify. This is Rapid Hybridization. It's a 1 blue instant, destroy target creature. It can't be regenerated. And that creature's controller creates a 3/3 green frog lizard creature token. And maybe you don't have this because you don't want more of one of that ability, but let me break it down for you just real quick. If you had a rule 0 conversation with your pod and you somehow convinced people that frog lizard and salamander are basically the same thing without the context of telling them about rapid hybridization, well, now you just got a new way to make another salamander. And that's a rule 0 convo. And I'm sorry that we put it on a podcast now everyone's going to know, but try it out with people that maybe won't.
Yeah, rapid hybridization, getting a salamander in air quotes. Mm-hmm. This was a lot of fun. Thank you, everybody, for joining us this week. If you want to find us online, you can find me on Twitter at Andy Flory.
And you can find me on Twitter at Wormcoil Engine. Of course, I want to give a special thanks to Ryan Nichols, our producer and editor. Thank you so much for everything that you do. And Chris Wolf, who handles all of our graphic design. Thank you for everything that you do. And to all the listeners out there, we will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.